one of the most mysterious, there's two mysterious things to me still. And one is the silent years of Christ from, you know, the brief sentence he spoke when he was 12, and then everything is silent until he's 30. And then this statement that what our function is to fill up the affliction that is lacking in the body of Christ. Both of these are probably not understood well by anyone because they are part of the deepest mystery. But let's go to Luke chapter 2. All of the preceding in Luke is about, remember Luke wrote this to the, what's his name? Anyway, it says, for as much as many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of those things which... Luke chapter 1, verse 1. I'm just sort of setting a stage.
Okay.
For as much as many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of those things which are most surely believed among us, even as they delivered them unto us, which from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word, it seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write unto thee in order most excellent Theophilus, that thou mightest know the certainty of those things which were wherein thou hast been instructed. And so what he did was collect when Jesus and the disciples were people, a lot of different people tried to record what Jesus said, and so they carried these things around. They're parchments or scrolls or rolls of just different things that Christ had said by the eyewitnesses. And so, in some of the Bibles, you'll see they bold the area that was a particular scroll. And one of my Bibles has it that way. So you can see which sections were. And so it became important. And then, of course, Mark and Matthew were written at different times, allegedly both from some other source document. But Luke's function was to set in order those things. And so he acted as an archivist and one who set in order all of these different things so that he tried to put them in a chronological order, where in Matthew and Mark sometimes they're not in chronological order. Do you understand? And then the same thing, and those were the parchments that are spoken of by Paul, that he said, bring my parchments with me. And these were, again, these writings that were the eyewitness writings of what Jesus had said and the surrounding phenomena. Now, they weren't set down in terms of books, etc., until much later. But Luke's was probably set down relatively early. And he was, remember, Luke was a physician. And he was one of the most learned men of the group. And so, anyway, does everybody understand that? Any questions about it?
When Christ was on the earth, was he a phenomenon? Was he the Billy Graham or the Mother Teresa of the day, or was he kind of invisible and not so much? No.
Well, the phenomenon of the day was John the Baptist.
Everybody knew John the Baptist.
Everybody knew John the Baptist. He was, because he was, it was the first time that a prophet had existed in 400 years that everybody acknowledged was a prophet. And his father, he had the utmost credentials. His father was, you know, of the order of the priesthood that did the altar of incense, which was very high up. And so he was, but Jesus wasn't, and is obviously, because first of all, when he left, when he was less than 2 years old, Joseph and Mary were warned by a vision or whatever to flee Bethlehem. And so they went and lived in Egypt until that particular Herod died. And then they came back, probably when Jesus was 10 or something. All right? Everybody understand all that? So, from the standpoint of chronology and probably accuracy of events, Luke is probably the most accurate. So anyway, so then...
This makes me think about, they've done, all these Bibles you read have all this harmony of the Gospels, and I've never even thought about that much, but somehow this makes that seem important and significant.
What do you mean, harmony of the Gospels?
Well, when you read Bibles, they always have something in the beginning or somewhere where people have these charts and everything to clarify events and try and show that there is harmony among them. Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, that they're all saying the same thing, even though there's little variations.
Well, they each show a different aspect of Christ. That's the, you know, in the garden, in one case, he's drawing back in fear and da-da-da. In the other case, he's shown with great power. I mean, it shows. Remember when we studied the offerings, we studied the purpose of the four Gospels in terms of how each shows the fulfillment, but in a slightly different way. They show the fulfillment of all the law, the writings, and the prophets. But it's interesting, I don't want to go into it now, but it shows him in his, one kind of shows him his weakness, the other shows him in his majesty. I mean, it's
yeah.
Okay?
Yeah, it's really cool.
All right, so we're now I just wanted to set that stage. So we're going over back to Luke 2. So Jesus was, it sets everything in here about it talks about how John the Baptist and Elizabeth was born, and then Mary was Elizabeth's cousin, and so talks about them going and the baby jumping in the womb and all of that. And then in verse 41, somebody read from 41 through the end of to chapter 3.
Now his parents
were... No, wait a minute, Pete, if you read, you're going to have to read louder so that people can hear it.
Chapter 2, verse 41, right?
Yeah.
Now his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem after the custom of the feast. And when they had fulfilled the days as they returned, the child Jesus tarried behind in Jerusalem, and Joseph and his mother knew not of it. But they, supposing him to have been in the company, went a day's journey, and they sought him among their kinsfolk and acquaintance. And when they found him not, they turned back to Jerusalem, seeking him. And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. And when they saw him, they were amazed, and his mother said unto him, Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing. And he said unto them, How is it that ye sought me? Wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? And they understood not the saying which he spake unto them. And he went down with them, came to Nazareth, and was subject unto them. But his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. And Jesus increased in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man.
All right. So that was the first time that there was any kind of awareness of Jesus, except, you know, the possibility of him when he was born. Now, from that time until chapter 4 and the temptation of Christ, he's silent. So essentially, from the time he's 12, he's silent from his birth to 12. He says, Know ye not that I must be about my father's business? Simple word. And then he's silent again until he's 30. Now, doesn't that seem kind of strange?
Yeah.
What, John?
52. He increased in wisdom and stature. That's more telling to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's important. Now, what did he do in those silent years? And what does it teach us about what our position? What he did in the silent years is as Son of Man, his mind, he's increased in wisdom and stature, and as Son of Man, slowly but surely, over those 18 years, he lost his point of view, because he saw that the end of his point of view as Son of Man was vanity and futility and emptiness There was no there. So for the whole of the silent years, and when he saw there was no there, as Son of Man, that he lost his whatever. The only way I can think of to say it is his point of view. Do you all understand what I mean by that? What?
I don't know, I just rocked it. So increasing in wisdom and stature means that he discovered.
Right. Now again, remember, all the time during all of those silent years, from the time he was 12, until he was 30, he went up to the feasts and read the readings over and over. And every three-year cycle, he went through those three-year cycles six times by the time he was 30. Right? And every time he went through, and which in a critical part of that three-year cycle was each year before the Feast of Tabernacles, which all the Jews recognized as the marriage supper, before that time, he slowly but surely, there was some kind of a dawning awareness that, wait a minute, what's going on here? And that, so he had a twofold thing going on. He slowly but surely pushed everything in his mind to the very edge of time and space itself to see the book of Ecclesiastes. Vanity of vanity, all is vanity. Then at 30, he saw that. And so he prefigured his death by his baptism. In the midst of the year, he caused the oblation to cease. You remember that? Daniel, in the midst of the 7 years? What he did is he, by his death, he, in essence, from his point of view, the law and the prophets, I mean, the sacrifices, from that point forward, had no meaning. So he was baptized. And that's when the first thing that happened after his baptism was what? He was led by the Holy Spirit into the wilderness. He fasted 40 days, and then he was tested, fasted, by the snake, by his mind. He was hungry, so his mind gave him solutions. So what does that, from our perspective, what does that mean? Don't you, what it means is we should be silent until we've lost our point of view as Son of Man. The same thing. Not silent but silent in terms of public speaking. Silent in terms of giving your quote-unquote testimony. Now, it can be instantaneous if you see, if you've come to the end of yourself before your baptism, before you come to this point, you know, then who knows. But the point of it is, as a human being, from your mind standpoint, as he is in the world, so are we. From that point, then until this fire burning within you finally comes out, it won't come out until you've lost your point of view. The same as Christ. Does that make sense? Do you understand that? What, John?
This is killing me.
Well, tell me, talk about it. What's killing you?
It's difficult for me to consider, and obviously it's my shortcoming. I can't think of Jesus Christ as a man. I always think of him preeminently. I know he's a man. Preeminently as God. So the notion of Christ, of Jesus, going through the machinations of discovery that result in knowing that Ecclesiastes is true, kills me.
Well, the reason it kills you is because for most of us,
it's very comforting to me in a way.
Of course. But for most of us, the reason it kills us is because it destroys our golden calf image of Jesus.
Yeah, maybe that's what's going on. I can't think of him as man. I can't think of him not knowing these things. I have this notion that he's doing it because it has to be written so that it could be said that he had done it, but he knows full well what the deal is in the meantime. I can't get around that.
Because that's, again, you haven't been taught in terms of your awareness of God that Christ had to be tested in all ways as we are, and yet without sin. And so this is huge. And for him, the sin, there was no sin in self-realization and the thoughts of self-realization until his baptism. Now, there are there's probably 50 or 60 different quote-unquote acts of Peter and gospel of the and blah, blah. There's a jillion of them that talk about that's exactly what you were, that Jesus Christ, even as a child, he killed somebody while he was playing with him and he raised him from the dead. And another one is he formed a bird out of clay in his hand and blew on it and it flew away. And I mean, the stories are endless because everybody's mind says that he didn't go through. They can't conceive that Jesus wet his pants or crapped in his diaper. They can't conceive of that weakness. And the reason they can't conceive of that weakness is because that is Satan's primary, that's why he rejected the Messiah. When Satan fell, he looked forward in time and saw this little mewing, crying baby crapping in his pants, totally helpless, and he said, I can't worship that. And he looked forward and saw him on the incontinent, on the cross, weakness, bleeding, crying out, why have thou forsaken me? And he said, I can't worship that. And if Satan can't worship that, then your mind can't worship that. Your mind can't get a hold of it. Can you see how important this is, though? Otherwise, Christ is only an ideal, or he's only somebody far off that someday you're going to meet. Instead of your very life, Christ in you, the hope of glory. What?
I'm thinking about at 12, surely he heard the stories of his birth and had to be very...
No, he didn't.
Of course he did. Why would you say no?
Because it says Mary said that she kept him hidden in her heart.
From him even?
Yes.
So...
In fact, Mary...
So you think that he grows up and at 12, the rumors that everybody knew all kinds of stuff, and I would suspect they would talk about it.
Who? Who knew all kinds of stuff?
That's not my point. I don't want to argue about that. My point is, I'm assuming he did know, okay? Let's assume that's true. But even so, I've had incredible rebirth experiences with God, and yet those fade into... past or something, because I still have to be tested, just like he was, just like he is in me.
No, we
don't need to talk about it.
Well, we do, because it's critical.
Well, I think it's a part of, you know.
When do you think he knew? Did he know when he was 18 months old?
No, when he was at least 12. 13.
How did he know? You forgot. Mary thought he was crazy, even after he started his ministry. The brothers and sisters thought he was crazy.
Yeah.
They forgot.
Right, that's the point.
But they certainly...
Even something as incredible as a virgin birth and all the other things that happened attendant to his early years seemed to lose their impact when in these silent years. And yet it was during that time when all this stuff had to come to fruition. I suspect at 30, when he looked back, and by then I would imagine he'd have heard the stories. And at that point, it has to all come together. And I see the same thing.
Why would you imagine that he's heard the stories? That's what I want to get to.
Because the stories were too remarkable to not have been circulated. And
to whom?
The community?
At least within the family. Families talk about secrets. They may not talk about secrets in front of the children, but they talk about secrets.
They don't talk about shame.
I'm sorry?
They don't talk about shame.
Yes, they do.
No,
they just don't do it where people, particularly children,
so they
figure
say,
it, you know.
You understand the shame of what happened to Mary?
Jesus thought Joseph was his father all his life?
Yes. Except Joseph probably died shortly. But anyway, that's another story.
But these aren't really, this isn't known. I mean, this is what...
But I want you to empathize and see that how quickly the human mind doesn't, it either neglects or think it was a dream. I want you to stop and think.
That's exactly what I'm
wait
saying.
Wait a minute.
Holy. Exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, but I'm saying I don't think that they told Jesus.
Well, but assuming they did, I'm saying he forgot too. Because if it was known that Joseph wasn't his father, and he hears the story, he's born of God or whatever must have been told, and yet he still goes through 20 years of, you know, where nothing's known about what he's doing. That factors in big time. Only as a parable to the same thing that takes place in a believer who has a magnificent experience with God, and then the next day can't remember it, discounts it, or takes it lightly.
Related to that, do you believe that Christ's life as a man was divinely scripted?
No more than yours is. He's wrought all our works in us.
That seems so obvious when you say that, and yet I can't.
Well, I know we have. That's because we've made Jesus into a golden calf. That's unlike us.
Well, he is when he's God.
Well, of course he's unlike us, but we have to see that he, as Son of Man, went through. He experienced all the tests that we did. The question is, do we continue in his test?
Yeah, Hebrews where it talks about he's a high priest that has suffered things.
I knew this was going to happen. These are the kind of things I spent years and years and years trying to, that's why I read all that stuff that, you know, about. And as I read it, I said, no, wait a minute. I mean, I don't, it's not for sure, but there's no evidence that he was ever told. That's all I can say to you. Anything else is speculation. Well, that's
it. He says, I must be about my father's business at 12 years old. There's something going on there.
I agree.
So he knew who his father was.
Well, but that's the point. Every Jew said that. Every Jew thought God was their father. They'd be not born of fornication. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Remember, the Jews believed that they were the chosen race and that they automatically, by as a birthright, became eligible for the kingdom of God. And they had to do something totally and completely outlandish in order to be excluded. Much like the once saved, always saved crowd in Christianity. That once they made a profession of faith, that whatever that means, that they then automatically are going to the promised land. What I'm trying to do is disabuse you of the golden calf areas of Jesus' life so that you see him as who he was and is. But we've wasted a whole morning. Any general thoughts?
What an amazing thing for him. I mean, sitting around commiserating with the most learned men of the time, and I would think he'd look around and see his peers were not doing that. These silent years were.
Now, wait a minute. What he was doing wasn't unusual. Remember, the Hillel and Gamaliel and the Rabbi Nasi, these were the great rabbis. And what they did is they held court at the various places in the temple. And the young people were encouraged to come and do exactly what Jesus was doing. That scene in the temple about the people marveling, they also marveled at Paul. They also marveled at other people that were of quick understanding. What, John? They're coming together a little bit?
That Jesus grew or increased in wisdom and stature to learn vanity of life.
Yeah.
But what do we think? What we do, what we think, is we think Jesus increased in wisdom and stature to become this great teacher, leader, person.
The wisest man who ever lived, Solomon, was the one that wrote Ecclesiastes.
Think on these things. We'll continue this tomorrow. Which button do you push?
The one that says off or stop.
You've already pushed plenty this morning.
Will you push the stop button, John?